Welcome to KABU, Emmeline Friedman.
Thanks for having me back here.
You've been on the Old Mole before to talk about the internet and digital technologies, including possibilities for reclaiming the internet as a public good or commons. So thank you for coming onto the show again today to discuss cryptocurrencies, that shadowy world that is mystifying to many, even as it has gained ground in the world of finance and become the target of increased calls for federal regulation. So let's start with a basic definition of cryptocurrencies. How do you define the basic principles or operating functions that classify a crypto or digital currency?
Sure. So the simplest definition of a cryptocurrency would just be a virtual currency used by members of a digital social network. And they can be used in numerous ways, though they represent an ownership stake of some digital asset. And they're often used to keep records and also to transact between members of the network.
So there's a whole side of this that has to do with its history and the banking crisis and the rise of Bitcoin after the 08-09 banking crisis, the Wild West of currencies, and has generated critiques from the left. I'd like to take up before your analysis of some of its promising possibilities. And as we all know, an intrinsic feature of capitalism is the banking and credit system. And there are those who argue that this is a newest symptom of capitalist crisis and its pathologies, the circulation of money and commodities through monetary systems that are removed from real human needs, and that digital currencies are even more removed from real human needs than the conventional monetary system that governs the world of banks and finance. So how would you respond to that critique?
Well, I think it is without a doubt the case that the first cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, emerged in response to the banking crisis of 08-09, as you say, and it was created to be a peer-to-peer cash system, basically an experiment in whether money as a form of social agreement could be made trustworthy by computation and by cryptography rather than by what is known in the cryptocurrency world as by government fiat, right? Because the government says it is and because you can use it to pay taxes. However, the question of whether or not cryptocurrencies are removed from, would you say, the actual world?
Yeah, the world of human need. And well, maybe we can return to that in a bit in terms of how you see the relationship between social needs and this world of cryptocurrencies. But I think there is also the question that many in the left take up around how circulation of commodities are converted into money and back into commodities. In his labor theory of value, Karl Marx describes capitalism as a system that generates profits for capitalists through extraction of surplus value from labor power, the circulation of money into commodities, including labor as a commodity and back into money, disguises the human relationships and exploitation built into the capitalist system itself. So from this theoretical perspective, do cryptocurrencies conceal relations of exploitation?
You know, Jan, I think this is where I diverge from that critique of cryptocurrencies, because as someone involved in distributed ledger technologies myself, what I see there is less an effort, and this is very much tethered to the mainstream critique of crypto as well, is that people assume that the idea is to recreate money itself. Like it's to replace an abstract media of exchange. And that's not necessarily the case. That's not necessarily what people who create cryptocurrencies are trying to do with their technologies. In fact, they're often trying to distribute a stake in a project or to distribute some other form of social responsibility and stake in their network, irrespective of what the aim of using it is. So, for example, you could have a cryptocurrency that denotes a voting right in a project that is aimed to collectivize effort around, say, it's doing a cleanup effort in an area or something like that. So in addition to being a representation of abstract value, people also use cryptocurrencies to denote stake and to denote responsibility. And so in that way, it actually has the possibility of amplifying social relations and making clear what it is that people care about and the way that they are collectivizing effort amongst themselves.
You're saying in that sense, defetishizing commodity production by exposing relations of production. Is this related to the blockchain technology? And you mentioned the distributed ledgers. Can you explain that a little bit? Those technologies that are the basis of, I guess, both these worlds of in kind of the Wild West of investments and also these other uses you're describing.
Gladly. Yeah. So what the public often hears about when they hear about cryptocurrency is these digital commodities, these coins that are created as a result of some sort of work in the network. So for example, a Bitcoin goes into circulation whenever someone's computer runs a complex computation that clears a transaction from one person to another. So essentially, like a Bitcoin emerges as a form of payment for, you know, someone's computer acting as a clearinghouse in the way that a bank typically would.
And there are hundreds of them now, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, cryptocurrencies?
Yeah.
There are thousands.
Oh.
There are nearly 10,000 cryptocurrencies.
Lots and lots.
Yeah, and this is not because people are trying to rival the function of Bitcoin as a transaction clearinghouse. This is because people are taking advantage of the underlying technology that has been developing since 2008. And this underlying technology is known as distributed ledger technology. So
is that related to the blockchain?
Exactly. So whether it's a blockchain,
can you describe that for our radio listeners? We don't have a whiteboard, but you can do a diagram. So let's sketch that out for us.
I think I can simplify. So the way that coins and transactions and other things, like I mentioned, voting is recorded is on a blockchain. So what a blockchain does is it replicates a copy of every transaction that happens on a network. It's basically like a record of events that everyone who's a member of the network stores on their own computer. And that's what's called being a full node. So essentially, on a blockchain, the reason why it is trustworthy and the reason why you don't need a central intermediary like a bank or like a database like Facebook's data centers, for example, is because everyone who participates stores a copy of what happens. And there have been other innovations in how to do this, but basically it's called distributed ledger technology because a ledger that records what the social network is doing is held by all of its members. And this is the key piece of decentralizing the power of the record holder that is really piquing the interest of, you know, social groups that are also seeking to distribute power differently from how it's distributed in, for example, capitalist firms.
So before we continue with that aspect of its use value, there are, of course, many environmental issues and alarm over just the massive amount of hard drive space that these ledgers consume that are quite staggering in the aggregate. Can you say anything about that aspect of the technology?
Absolutely. So you can hear right in the definition I gave, you know, the fact that everyone holds a copy of everything that happens in the network uses a massive amount of computation and storage and therefore energy and electricity, right? So this is indeed a serious issue facing the blockchain world. But as I alluded to, there are other innovations that are seeking to sort of create the same use value, like create a trustworthy distributed ledger, even if it doesn't necessarily do the replication of computation that uses so much energy.
So you're not concerned about that, the environmental aspect of the technologies? I mean, you think they can be addressed without greenwashing?
Well, I happen to, you know, full disclosure, I happen to work on a project called Holochain that I was immediately attracted to in 2017 because I was concerned with this energy problem. And Holochain is a different distributed ledger technology from blockchain that does not replicate all data on the network, but it, you know, it does a different sort of technical maneuver called gossip, where it creates enough redundancy in order to trust the ledger, but it doesn't replicate all of the data fully in the way that consumes so much energy. And my project is not the only one doing this. There are other efforts to address the energy use while also maintaining the trustworthiness that enables the ledger to be truly distributed.
So the jury's out on the, still out on that point. One question I have for you relates to the social organization aspects of this, that it seems to me that it requires considerable sophistication to enter into this world, even at this level of the distributed ledgers, and that people are not provided much protection. There's no help desk. No, you know, when my bank account gets hacked, I can call my credit union and, you know, tell them what happened and, you know, and the funds get retrieved. There are help desks in this world that people are learning about and navigating, some through companies and some through things like the credit unions. From what I understand of entering into the digital world of currencies or ledgers, there is considerable exposure, vulnerability to being hacked, exploited at that level, at the user interface level. Do you have any sense of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely the case. And, you know, part of the Wild West of crypto is that you don't get those assurances. But one thing that I do want to add is that I think that those are issues primarily facing people who enter into crypto networks as consumers or basically as speculators, right? So if you want to simply buy Bitcoin because you think that it will rise in value, you have to interact with some sort of exchange that isn't regulated the way that, you know, the way that the stock exchange is or the way that typical banks are. However, if you enter in as a producer, or as a participant, you could say, on the network, you know, as we mentioned, there are 10,000 currency projects, and they don't all sort of focus on this speculative value element. A lot of them focus on, you know, creating buy-in for some sort of social project. And it could connect up with anything in the real world, basically. So it really depends why you are entering into a crypto network, you know, whether it's to speculate on a popular cryptocurrency is one thing. But if it is to, you know, be a participant in a digital cooperative form of organizing, that's quite another.
In closing, is there an example, either a real example or a conceptual or theoretical example to illustrate that potential for these technologies and perhaps what is more associated with the libertarian anarcho-syndicalist traditions of confronting and finding alternatives outside of the capitalist finance system?
Sure, absolutely. So I'll leave us with, you know, we addressed the energy issue of blockchains. So I will leave us with an example of a, you know, a cooperative microgrid company that is building their cooperative on Holochain. And this is a company, you know, it started in, I believe, Australia, and it's called Red Grid. And the idea is that they are using they're using the cryptocurrency space to provide micro funding for solar panels. And they also intend to use distributed ledgers to track the use of these solar panels and to sort of keep track of how much energy there is and at which times for a community of participants. And holding this cryptocurrency that they're creating also gives one voting rights about, you know, the direction that the company takes. So as you can see, there are some elements of using fine-grained computation that would be required in a solar panel energy project in the first place. There are elements of using the cryptocurrency world to gain funding for a project without having to go through traditional channels. And there are also elements of holding a stock, which is that one has some sort of governance rights in the network.
In along the lines of a co-op model?
Exactly.
Well, this is hopefully demystifying, although there's, I think, a lot still to navigate, and the terrain ahead still is uncertain in terms of where these technologies go and how they intersect with the world of finance and banking. That the left, since Marx particularly, has been generated critiques and often alternatives such as social banks or public banks. So we'll have to bring you on the show again and help us follow this as it unfolds further. This is Jan Hawken talking today with Emmeline Friedman about cryptocurrencies and their potential for the left.
Thanks again for having me.